So I always like to put my reflections in a context. I think we all like to know how life works, because the more we know how life works, the more we can work life on our behalf and on the behalf of others. And life really does work a certain way at all times and in all places. And the way it works was designed and created by God. And the good news is that God wants to share with us the secret of how life works. Remember the Greek myth of Prometheus? He had to steal the fire. Well, it's a Greek myth. He stole the fire, then he was punished by the gods for trying to steal fire. The thing that he didn't know was all he had to do was ask the gods for the fire and they would have given it. So God is generous. So in the words of Jesus tonight, we hear how life works. And what I'm about to say is not hyperbole, it's not exaggeration. It's as true or truer than the law of gravity. It's as true as all the laws of physics. There's four major laws of physics by which the universe functions. It's as true, if not more true, than those laws of physics. These are metaphysical laws, divine laws. And Jesus gives them to us tonight. It's in the Gospel of Luke. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. And the measure that you give to others will be measured back to you. Pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure that you give is the measure that comes back to you. All right, so let me talk about how that works. And, you know, I like to bring a little bit of science whenever I can so that you don't think that this stuff is just hocus pocus. There is something called spiritual magic, but it's not hocus pocus. We know that everything, whether it is, regardless of what form it is, everything is energy. Right? We know that's what science tells us. Everything is energy, just vibrating at different frequencies. Let's think of water for a moment. H2O can be in the form of ice, because its frequencies are slower. It can be in the form of flowing water, or it can be in the form of vapor. Same H2O, just vibrating at different frequencies. So everything is energy, and every form of energy, and this is science, every form of energy emits some kind of magnetism. Literally, some kind of magnetism. And that magnetic field that it emits draws back to it like energy. You've all heard that. Like energy attracts like energy. So everything that is energy. Everything that is possesses and emits a magnetic field that pulls like energy back to it. You with me so far? Okay. Every thought we think is a thing. It's a form of energy. They can map your thoughts in your brain. The brain lights up when you think thoughts. Thoughts are things. Thoughts emit a magnetic field or energy that attract like thoughts. Our words are very powerful things. They're literally vibrations with a magnetic aura that attracts back to it like energy. Our actions are energetic fields that attract back like energy. That's how everything works. Everything. So when Jesus says, if you show mercy, mercy will be given back to you, he's not saying that God is some kind of accountant in the sky writing things in the book and then saying, oh, you showed mercy, I'm going to give you some. Oh, you didn't? You're screwed. That's not how it works. God created the universe in this magnetic way that whatever we sow, we reap. We call that karma in yoga. Who are the people that have the most love in their lives? They're the people that give love away. Even on a business level, you can't be successful as an entrepreneur unless you invest time, energy, skill, and capital. And as you invest it, you do it well with wisdom and intelligence and the right attitude, you attract things back to you. That's what Jesus is talking about. He says, and this is like literally true. It's not a metaphor. It's not a Hallmark greeting. When he says, the measure you give, whether it's love or anger, whether it's greed or generosity, the measure that you give is going to come back to you, not in equal proportion, but he says, in measure pressed down and overflowing in your lap. That's how life works. It's that simple. It's not always that easy, but it's that simple. And the more that we evolve spiritually, the more we take responsibility for our thoughts. Now, you've heard me say this before. You can't control every thought that comes into your head, but you can control how you respond to those thoughts. And over a period of time, you can learn to respond to those thoughts with thoughts that are more loving and more positive and more generous and more truthful. You can choose over a period of time how you're going to think. That's why it's so important to read sacred scriptures, because they help you to think the thoughts of God. And the more you think the thoughts of God with love, with the right intention, the more godly things come back to you into your life. Go back to the beginning of Genesis and the Jewish scriptures. And, you know, we're made in the image and likeness of God, and I don't say this with arrogance. We can only be like God with God, but we're meant to be like God. We're made in the divine image. And there was chaos, right? You go back to the beginning of Genesis. And how did order come into the chaos? God spoke order. God said, let there be light, and the light penetrated the chaos. We're made in the divine image. We're meant to bring order into the chaos of our lives and the chaos of the world. So let's talk about how we do that now. I always start out with this, and I don't apologize for it, meditation. Now, we meditate in the Kriya tradition for two reasons. There's lots of side benefits. I was talking to somebody about this today. Yes, it helps to reduce stress and all of that. Great. But that's not primarily why we meditate. Two reasons in the context of what I'm talking about tonight. When we go into that stillness and the silence, all the negative magnetism that has been percolating inside of us falls away. I'm going to repeat that. All of the negativity, the negative energy that has been percolating inside of us falls away. It can't grab onto anything. That's why the silence is so important. But the second reason that follows from that is that in that silence and in that aspiration to be in union with God, then God's thoughts, so to speak, begin to percolate inside of us. Thoughts of truth, thoughts of beauty, thoughts of goodness, thoughts of healing, thoughts of love, thoughts of strength. They begin to percolate in us, and they become our thoughts. And then they magnetize our thoughts. And what we put out comes back to us, Jesus said, pressed down and overflowing. The second thing that we do to cultivate this is prayer. I'm not talking about praying for things like, you know, a new car, so on and so forth. The ultimate prayer, besides thank you, besides gratitude, is praying to be in alignment with the divine mind and the divine will. Praying, as Francis said, to be an instrument of love, an instrument of healing. When we pray with that kind of sincerity, it literally changes the chemistry of our thoughts. It changes the chemistry of our emotions. And it changes the chemistry of our words and our life. All of Yogananda's direct disciples are dead now. But I've talked to enough of them. And they said that whenever they were around Yogananda, there was this intense magnetism, that they were drawn to him and drawn to the love and the light that radiated from him. Why? Yogananda's mind and heart was one with the divine mind and heart. His magnetism was divine. And so he attracted people. Before he came to the United States, his guru, Sri Yukteswara, said, you could be in a forest and you will attract souls. Why? Because he was so magnetized. On a different level, whenever I've been in the presence of Richard Rohr, my Franciscan priest and mentor, I'm always elevated. I'm always inspired. I walk away a little bit better. Why? He's magnetized with the Christ consciousness. That's how it works. Now I want to break it down even more concretely. So I'm going to do this quickly. I want to talk about a way that we can nurture this in addition to meditation and prayer in our everyday life. And I'm going to talk about the five yamas. Now, I talked about two of the yamas about a month ago, so I'm going to repeat myself a little bit. Those of you that are not familiar with the yamas, there's the yamas and the niyamas of yoga. They're sort of like the Ten Commandments of yoga. And they're very similar to the Ten Commandments. Someday I will break the Ten Commandments down. But today I'm just going to focus on the yamas. Because properly understood, if you get the spirit of the yamas, you are magnetizing yourself with divine energy. And each yama has a particular nuance of divine energy. And you're magnetizing yourself. And what you put out there comes back to you. The first yama is non-injury. Now, we can look at that at a very superficial level. All right, I don't hurt anybody. I don't kill anybody. I don't, you know, shoot anybody. But realize that there are subtle levels of that. We can injure somebody's reputation. We can injure their psychological and emotional health. We can injure their spiritual health. There's lots of ways to injure people. But I want to take it deeper, because these yamas are not just about behavior. It's like, okay, if I, you know, like the Ten Commandments, I'm going to do them. Okay, no, we miss the whole point. You got to get the spirit. And each yama, again, has a different energy, a different magnetizing spirit. So what's at the heart of this first yama of non-injury is, it's an aspect of God, compassion. Let me give you an example. Vicki and I were at, I don't want to go into the details, but an official occasion, and I was serving in an official role at a place. And the person that was in charge of all the details, she was not a happy human being. Okay? She was grumpy and miserable. And every time you asked her a question, you were a little bit afraid of the response. And my first response was not to practice non-injury. Right? My first response was to be critical of her. But being critical of her, even just verbally, without saying it to her face, would have been injuring at some level. That's what I would have been putting out there. Does that make sense? Okay. So, you know, I meditate a lot. I pray. So somewhere in the middle of that, I caught myself. And I had this very spontaneous, compassionate response. The thought occurred to me, she's probably just a very unhappy person. Who knows? Maybe she has cancer. Who knows? Maybe her husband beat her up that morning. Something is making her miserable. And just having that insight, I got the spirit of the Yama. Compassion. Compassion. She was probably doing the best she could. I changed my frequency. I changed the energy that I was putting out, which will only draw compassion back in measure, pressed down and overflowing. One little footnote. Be very compassionate with yourself. Very compassionate. Sometimes we have a tendency, we look back at something we did 20 years ago, and then we're so hard on ourselves. But the person we are now was not the person that was there 20 years ago. The person that's there now wouldn't do that. Have compassion on the person that you were 20 years ago because you didn't know what you were doing. Does that make sense? So the spirit underneath this is compassion. Looking at somebody with your heart. And that's how God looks at us all the time. God understands why we do the stupid things we do and has compassion. The second yama is truthfulness. Now, we can, again, just take that in a very literal way. Okay, don't lie, always tell the truth. But it's much more than a behavior. Gandhi has a very interesting line that parallels something Jesus said. Gandhi said that God is truth. Jesus said, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. Truth is a dynamic force. It's an organizing energy. It is the mind of God in time and space organizing everything. And we suffer to the extent that the facts of our life, the situations in our life are not in alignment with the truth, and we cease to suffer when the facts and the situations in our life are aligned to truth. But truth is a force. And so what's at the spirit of this yama of truthfulness is we have a hunger and a desire for truth. We want the truth more than we want anything else. And when we want that, God gives us the truth. We have clarity. We understand ourselves, the world, how life works, and we live from the truth. And then the more we live from the truth, more truth comes back to us. I've told this parable before, but I'll tell it again. It's a parable about Jesus. And he's walking through the countryside, and he comes to a group of people who are pretty miserable. And he says to them, "What's up?" And they said, "We're in hell and we want to get out. Can you help us?" He said, "No, I really can't help you, but good luck." And he goes on his way. He comes to a second group. They're not so miserable, but they're not so happy either. And he says, "What's up?" And they said, "We're not in hell, but we want to get into heaven. Can you help us?" And he said, "No, I really can't. Good luck." And he goes on his way. Then he comes across the third group. Third group is weather-worn, but there's something different about them. And he says to them, "What's up?" And they said, "We're not in hell, and we're not trying to get into heaven." He said, "Well, what do you want?" And they said, "We just want the truth. We want unbridled truth." And Jesus said, "Can I stay with you for a long time?" And they said, "Yes." Think about this in terms of addiction. When do people get better? When they break their denial and they admit that they have an addiction. That truth in that moment is the energy, the dynamic truth and mind of God in time and space leading you to where you need to go. So underneath this commandment of truth telling or this yama of truth telling, it's this hunger for truth because truth is in perfect alignment with reality and reality is God. God is the really real. So it's the hunger for truth. So now I'm going to get to the third yama. It's non-stealing. Now again, I don't think most of us steal in the traditional way of thinking about stealing. But I want you to understand the spirit of this. And I'll tell you another story. I've told this story before, but it's a great story that captures this. One of Yogananda's direct disciples, Brother Turiyananda, actually wasn't a direct disciple. He showed up the day that Yogananda died. Okay? And he was older now. He probably died 2 or 3 years after this. And this young guy promised to come help him. He was in charge of the temple at the lake shrine. And this young guy said he would come and help him do things. Well, the young guy showed up like 25 minutes late. And he said, Turiananda didn't say, I understand, it's okay. He said, Turiananda went up one side and down the other side of him. And then Turiananda said to him, in a manner of speaking, you're stealing from me. He said, no, I'm not. He said, I'm an old man. My time is very valuable. I needed your help, and you wasted 25 minutes of my time. I could have been doing something productive for God. Don't ever waste my time again. That's stealing. You get that? What does that mean? How do we break that down for us? Sometimes in our neediness, don't we grab from other people and we want them to be what we want them to be? That's stealing. When you don't accept somebody for who they are and you try to make them something that they're not, that's a form of stealing. You're trying to grab something from them, who they are, rather than just letting them be who they are. It doesn't mean you have to like it. It doesn't mean you have to sleep with them. It doesn't mean they have to become your best friend. But you accept who they are and you stop trying to change them. You stop trying to get them to make you happy. Whenever you want somebody else to make you happy, you're stealing their happiness for yourself. So what's underneath this non-stealing ultimately is faith in the generosity of God and contentment. That's what it's about. Once you're content within yourself, because you've found the pearl of great price within yourself, you stop demanding from other people, from money, the world, something from them to make you happy. Contentment is not wanting what you don't have because you have God, which means you have everything. That's the spirit of this yama. And the more we practice this contentment, this non-stealing, paradoxically, the more abundance comes to us. That's how it works. The next yama is brahmacharya. Now, that's often translated as celibacy. Yes, you all have to go home tonight and be celibates. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. No, that's one translation. It's not the only translation. Let me say it this way. Every day we are given 100 units of energy. It's a metaphor, but it's in the ballpark. We're given 100 units of energy, right? And the best use of that energy is to live a life based on truth, beauty, and goodness. The more we do that, paradoxically, the more energy comes back to us. Yogananda said we go from being a 50-watt bulb to a 100-watt bulb, and eventually we become a 1,000-watt bulb when we manage the life energy wisely and lovingly. How do we misuse the life energy? Spending 3 hours scrolling through your iPhone. I'm not saying doing that once in a while is a bad thing, but getting lost in scrolling down your iPhone is a waste of life units that you're never going to get back. It's like having a seed that you don't plant. Eating too much that makes your life energy spend a lot of time and energy on digesting food that isn't good for your overall health anyways, and it's energy you can't use for truth, beauty, and goodness. So brahmacharya is managing energy, the life force that God has given you that is an expression of the divine breath in the Holy Spirit. It is honoring it. It is privileging it. It is being grateful for it. That's the spirit and the energy of that particular yama, brahmacharya, is gratitude, to really appreciate this life force. One of the things I remind myself of every morning, millions of people went to sleep last night and did not wake up today. I get another day to serve God. I get another day to have the privilege of being married to Vicky. I get another day to be a father, to be a grandfather. I get another day to be a friend and to be a spiritual teacher. I get another day to water my fig trees.
And make the bed.
Well, we're working on it. Okay. But do you see what I'm saying? And I do want to take a moment and tie it into sex, because it isn't unrelated to sex, but it's not reducible to sex. Richard Rohr told me this many, many, many years ago. He said, never write a check with your body that your life can't cash. When you give your body to somebody, what you're saying is, I'm giving you myself, my beingness. That's what your body represents. If your life can't back it up, it's not good. Somebody's going to get hurt. Don't write a check with your body that your life can't cash. I'm not saying repress that sexual energy. It's best used in the context of love and sometimes procreation. That's how it's meant to be used. So that's brahmacharya. And again, the essence of it is gratitude for the life force that has been given to us. Use it properly, wisely, and responsibly. Then there's non-possessiveness. It's the last of the yamas. And the spirit of non-possessiveness is both gratitude and generosity. Let me say it this way. What has been given to us, what do we have that's not been given to us? Nothing. Everything we have has been given to us. Everything we have is a gift from God. Our intelligence is a gift. Our bodies are a gift. Our sexuality is a gift. Our intellect is a gift. Our spirits are a gift. Everything that we have is a gift that has been given to us by God. And God wants to give us more and more gifts. It's the nature of God to be generous. God, as St. Bonaventure says, God is a fountainhead of generosity. When we take the gifts and we possess them as our own, as they belong to us, and we hoard them, they actually shrivel up and die. But when we see them as a gift from God, that they belong to God, and then we give them back to God in service of God, everything belongs to the Divine Mother, and we give them back in service, again, this law kicks into effect, and the more that comes back to us. I say this about the Assisi Institute all the time. Yes, we're here to serve our own spiritual growth, but we're also here to serve Yogananda's mission, Jesus's mission. We're here to bring Kriya Yoga to the world. We're here to bring our little piece to the world. We're not here to just possess it with in-house games. We're here to give it away. And the paradox is, the more we give it away, the more that comes back to us. And I'm not perfect at this, don't misunderstand me. My own spirituality began to really grow and take off when I realized I was here for one purpose, to serve God, to serve the gurus, and to serve the people in my life. That's why I'm here. That's when things really began to mushroom for me spiritually. Jesus said, the measure you give will be what is measured back to you, pressed down, overflowing into your lap. It will be given to you. You can take that to the bank. That is absolute truth. And that is the only way to live a wise and loving life. The divine in me bows before the divine in each one of you. Namaste.